Tim McDonald, hello.
Peter Parrish, hello.
We haven't done a podcast in like forever. Shall we do a podcast right now?
I guess.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Yes, it's been a while, folks. Do I have anything to address from, like, the 300 years ago? Oh, I was supposed to do some apology video featuring a cat.
Did people demand this?
Well, I saw a couple of comments expressing interest. I did try, but as cat owners will know, it's not the easiest thing, really, to make a cat behave. But I know now why Trevor Martin did his with a dog. Because they're a lot easier to get to stay in one place, apparently.
My ex managed to train her cat. Like, it came when called and everything.
Mine will...
But then again, her cat was vaguely mentally damaged because it kept charging face first into glass doors.
Now, ours will come when called to an extent. If you kind of lean down and do the kind of rubbing fingers cash motion...
Yeah,
he'll go. No, oh, what's this? Are you going to feed me? I don't know if that counts.
No, I mean this was like dog levels of obedience,
right?
Was incredibly bizarre to watch.
Marlo's
like, you're
that.
A fucking cat. You shouldn't be doing this.
You should be pretending like you're playing along and then going, "Ah, I'm going to fuck it up at the last minute. Screw you." Mm. So anyway, I guess. I will now apologize for not doing an apology spoof video and promise a new one in which I apologize for not doing the apology and then not do that. And the cycle can continue ad infinitum.
And eventually one of these will just be a picture of your cat with an overlay
voice. I'm sorry,
voice.
Written in Comic Sans over it. In magenta, yeah, basically. There's been
some sort of classical music plays over the background.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like this should mostly be a talking about games we've played pod because, you know, it's been 2 weeks. I've played a whole bunch of stuff. I'm sure you have, Tim. But I would like to allow maybe one piece of news. I don't know if you have anything interesting. You want to, you know, Dota stuff's happening.
Dota stuff is happening.
Just wondered if you wanted to say anything about that.
International 6 group stages on right now as we record.
Right
this.
Now.
I'm recording this
Holy
instead
shit.
Of watching them. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Main event in a few days.
Thank you for your sacrifice for, you know, doing this podcast rather than watching the early rounds.
That's all right.
The one piece of news I wanted to mention was that BBC 4 are putting out a call for people to compete in a new Time Commanders show. Yes! Which I think could either be amazing or a total disaster, but either way, I'm...
that's Time Commanders in a nutshell. It yes. was simultaneously amazing yeah. and a total disaster.
Yeah. They didn't.
The only way it could be better, worse, is if they got Craig Charles to host it.
Oh my goodness! Don't say such things. No, I want that to be true. They didn't
you'll,
mention.
You'll get excited, horrified.
They didn't mention who was going to host it. They also didn't mention Creative Assembly at all. But the Creative Assembly or possibly the Total War Twitter account like retweeted the thing. They were looking for people to take part, so I'm pretty sure. I mean, you can't have Time Commanders without some sort of Total War-based engine powering it, can you? That would just be stupid.
Well, have you ever watched Deadliest Warrior?
No, I haven't.
That god-awful show in the US where they pit random historical factions against each other.
Is that the one they made the chivalry spin-off game?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yes. Right. I know the game.
Yeah, you have like, oh, who'd win in a fight between five pirates and five ninjas? Who'd win between Vikings and knights?
I don't know. Are they at sea? I mean...
The best one they did was the Taliban versus the IRA.
What?
Yep.
Well, the Taliban are won.
Yeah, and they have at the very end of the episode, they have like a live action thing where they fight it out, and it is hilarious. But the software that they use to calculate who wins this is was designed by Slytherin.
Oh, wow. Nice. I thought it was going to be like Bohemia for, you know, Armor 3 or something. I think that could work quite well.
Do
you recall who won between the Taliban and the IRA? Because I fancy the Taliban in that matchup, personally speaking.
I think it was the IRA.
Well, some offence to the IRA. They are a terrorist organisation.
I think it was the IRA, but yeah, that is a fucking terrible show, and it's really entertaining for
Taliban
exactly that
lose?
Purpose.
They've got all this, they've got all the Soviet equipment from the 80s that got left behind after the war. They've got all the CIA stuff that they were given to help fight that war against the Soviets. Surely.
I think because the IRA have got quite a lot of stolen British assault rifles and car bombs and stuff like
that. I'm
not sure.
Yeah.
It was, for some reason, the live action shootout that they had at the end was set in, I think it was a fucking junkyard.
So, what, in Ireland? Did Afghanistan? Where were they? Did the IRA have
probably
home
in Texas?
Is that
her? Probably in Texas. They also had, what was one of the others? It was, I think it was the Yakuza versus the Mafia.
All right, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, God. It's
so what does the engine look like? What is it, kind of a 3D rendering?
No, as far as I know, it's just sort of a simulation software where they put in all the numbers. Like, they give particular advantages to different weapons and so on. It, like, simulates 300 battles between the factions with these statistics or something, and then whoever wins the most battles wins the little terribly acted live action thing that they do at the end.
I was envisaging some like mid-90s Half-Life 1 quality 3D package in which the...
No, that would probably be better.
Yeah. Anyway, Time Commanders is coming back. It seems like
for the uninitiated, what's Time Commanders?
Good point. A lot of people won't have seen Time Commanders. Time Commanders was a BBC show. I think it was on BBC Two, probably. In when was it on? Like late '90s, probably early 2000s,
something like that. It was variant of the Total War?
It was Rome, the first Rome they used.
Okay,
which I think was already out. You know, I don't think that was like ahead of release or anything. Basically they'd get on a team of four unsuspecting British civilians who would like all be civil servants or hairdressers or something, or students maybe, you know. They'd all kind of share a profession, usually Crystal Maze style, you know. Oh God, do I have to explain the Crystal Maze? I hope not. Forget that. It's not important.
No. The Crystal Maze is easy to explain. It's basically people doing impossible stuff while Richard O'Brien mocks them and plays the harmonica.
Richard O'Brien being Riff Raff from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, if you're not familiar.
And if you don't know what the Rocky Horror Picture Show is, piss off.
We're not delving that far into referencing cultural things. Anyway, so
there's a point where you can't explain stuff any further without it becoming meaningless.
And then basically the presenter of Total War, which was Eddie Mayer at one point and someone else either before or after him, he'd be there, and they would be given a historical battle, one that the Rome Total War, or Total War Rome as it was, engine would be capable of recreating. And they'd basically play out the battle against the AI. They'd split up into two groups of two, and two of them would be the sort of commanders, and then two of them would be like maybe like sub commanders somehow, because they'd have to kind of issue a chain of orders, which is where things sometimes broke down hilariously, where one commander's like, "Can we get our cavalry over here, please?" And then it just doesn't quite happen. Yeah, and then they'd basically just fight the battle against the AI. There would also be interjections from Mike Lodes, I think. He was kind of an expert on period weaponry. So he'd go like, "Oh, you know, the Persians, they'd have this kind of weapon," which was great for doing this type of maneuver or what have you. And there was another historian Eric Nussback. Yeah, who'd also go on about military history and stuff. But basically, it was people playing Total War who'd never played a video game before, let alone a game of Total War. So yeah, you can imagine how that went.
It used Rome Total War, but it was like a slightly tweaked, specialized version, I think, specifically for the show, supposedly. Basically,
and they weren't
Americans.
Actually, no one was actually playing it. Like, no one was like using a mouse or anything. It's just they were issuing orders to people who presumably behind the scenes were going, all right, they want their cavalry over there, so we'll do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it was surprisingly stupid. Yet fun.
Basically, the easiest way to explain it, I think, to Americans at least, is to say that it's like the British version of Deadliest Warrior.
Sure, yeah, all right.
Only, you know, it's a bit more po-faced and historical and so on and so forth, but still unbelievably stupid.
So I think in this new version, it sounds like they're going to have two teams of three each, and each team will do a battle against the AI, and then they'll play against each other as like a sort of climactic third act.
Are they going to use Warhammer?
They're going to have
some guy from Games Workshop come on to explain things.
Going, right, the thing you have to know about orcs is they like bashing shit around.
Now the Skaven use these weapons. Oh wait, the Skaven aren't in that. Never mind.
Not yet. They might be though by the time this shows up. I don't know. They didn't mention which game they're using. I'd be surprised if they're using Warhammer. Delighted, but surprised.
I'd be surprised if they're using Rome too.
Well, yeah. Probably Attila, I guess, would be the most likely. Or maybe they're going to make a special one. Maybe they'll, you know, do some kind of bespoke custom engine thing.
Rome 2 was probably being patched up enough that they could do it without it seeming incredibly shonky right now.
As far as I can recall, the historical battle scenarios work fine in Rome 2 these days. Most of its problems were, you know, the AI can't handle landing with boats and stuff like that, which I think they fixed up most of that as well. Actually, last time I played it was pretty good. So yeah, maybe
they could use Empire Total War, and you can accidentally start World War II about 20 years too early.
Yeah, maybe. So anyway, I'm excited for Time Commanders.
Are you going to be able to watch it over in America?
There are ways and means that I would be able to watch it. Yes.
Fair enough. So, I did see actually they've changed. It's completely inconsequential to most people who are probably listening to this, but they've changed the iPlayer thing. You now actually have to have you have to pay the license fee to watch iPlayer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I watched some of Euro 2016 on iPlayer using a clever proxy device to pretend I was British.
You're going to get a letter from the Beeb telling you that you need to pay your license fee.
Well, you know, is there even an option for me to do that and be able to watch it from the US? Because if there was, I might consider that. You know, there's a lot of good stuff on iPlayer, but I don't think there actually is a way for me to do that because of rights issues.
Sherlock and everything. That. Wait, that's on Netflix, never mind.
Yeah, never mind. So yeah, we've both played quite a few games, I would imagine, in the interim periods where we weren't doing podcasts. Also, Tim, you've had a root canal recently. How's that? Is it feeling all right?
Fucking hurts.
Right.
Which it probably shouldn't. Like root canal is basically removing the nerve, so it shouldn't hurt
because there's now an absence of nerve. Yeah, but
it kind of does. He said something about how he did something to the tooth next to it to like stimulate the healing or something. I don't understand it. Or maybe it's just the gum is inflamed.
I mean, he's obviously going to have been poking around in there a lot, isn't he?
It was proper fucking sci-fi. the dude was a specialist and, you know, maximum respect to him. He was really good at his job. It was done under a microscope.
Oh, right, okay.
So was he
watching a screen than he was watching your mouth then, like with some...
No, he was... Like, there was this... There was like a microscope positioned directly above my mouth, mm-hmm. and he was like looking into that, through the viewfinders of that. Oh, and yeah. It was, I mean, I had my eyes closed for most of it, to be perfectly honest. But it was really weird. And there was the option that you could like watch a film while it was going on. So they had like glasses that presumably can stream media to them or something like that. It was a bit weird.
Does it take that long? Like, would you have enough time to watch a film?
Took, I think the appointment was probably about an hour, hour and a quarter, something like that. Okay,
so you could watch one of those shit straight to DVD films that only managed to be about 80 minutes long.
I could probably have watched like three episodes of Community, but I might have laughed, and that would have been bad.
Yeah, good point. You want a film that leaves you very surprised all the time to just have open mouth.
And not Marathon Man.
No. you could do like Fantastic Voyage or something like that, maybe.
Probably.
Have you played much of EDF 4.1, Tim? Because that's a game I've played quite a bit.
I have not played much of it. I've played a bit of it.
I think it's quite good. Well, good is...
I think it's EDF.
I haven't played an EDF game before. I only knew of them by association.
With FIFA, you have now basically played all of them.
Excellent. Good to know. This one seems like a good one, probably. I don't know. It's kind of a remastering of 2025, apparently. And then it popped across to the PC, which happened quite quickly. I got an email one evening that said, oh yeah, we're releasing it like next week. So I asked for a copy, and the guy was great. He was like, oh, I'm really sorry for the delay, even though he sent me back a copy within about 12 hours of having asked for it. I was like, oh, man, you're on the ball. Much better than a lot of PR people. Don't worry about it.
So tell me about EDF, Peter. How many giant ants have you sent ping-ponging into skyscrapers with a rocket launcher?
Too many to count. The giant ants sent ping-ponging into skyscrapers with rockets is too numerous. I couldn't possibly say all of them, probably.
I'm fairly certain it's not all of them. I'm pretty sure there are more. There are always more. I've played EDF before.
I'm about 30 missions in. I've just done a sort of sequence where you go underground and you have to blow up the queen ant. Although I suspect there will be more queen ants or just some worse queen ants later, judging by how this game is going.
I haven't got that far, but the one that I played years and years ago, I do remember doing an underground mission where I had to blow up a queen ant. Mm-hmm. So it's good to know some things haven't changed.
basically, it has single player and it has co-op. It also even has split screen co-op on the PC version, which is kind of nice. Rarity. Good to have that option.
It has weapons that give Just Cause 3 penis envy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know those sort of space animes where they lock onto about 50 things at once with a rocket, and then they just unleash all the rockets. That's that kind of thing.
I believe it's called the Macross Missile Barrage, or Macross Missile Spam, as it was Macross or Macross that popularised that.
I will defer to your knowledge on that fact. Yes, it's.
I'm a saddo. You should.
It's very superficially Dynasty Warriors, but instead of a Romance of the Three Kingdoms person, you are a kind of B-movie military soldier man. And instead of fighting lots of just random goons, you're fighting giant ants and giant robots and, big kaiju-type lizard creatures, all the B-movie staples.
Giant spiders make a routine appearance in these games as well, mm-hmm. which usually don't freak me out too much because they're normally incredibly poorly animated.
I was going to ask you, there's two variants of giant spider even that I've come across. There's the ones that sort of lurk in the massive webs that they build between skyscrapers, and then there's the other ones that sort of they kind of bound around like excitable puppies while firing bits of web at you. It's a weird game. It's a pretty great game. It's like
it's a really stupid game, but that is so good.
I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but they've kind of managed to take the B-movie aesthetic and apply it to video game mechanics in the sense that, like, the physics aren't quite right, and, you know, everything's a bit...
The physics are horribly off.
Everything's just kind of wonky and a bit off, but it works, because it's gloriously stupid.
I will admit, right, the physics may have changed. I wasn't paying that much attention to them when I briefly played this EDF, but back when I was playing it years ago on the consoles or whatever, yeah, a rocket, you would fire a rocket, like, the instant something died, it was like it immediately lost all weight and mass.
Yeah, that happens.
So
that
if you
happens.
Shot it, it would just go flying across the horizon and smack into a skyscraper and ping pong around.
That's accurate, yes. That still occurs. Maybe, I mean, maybe less than it used to, but that's still definitely, I've seen that happen. Yeah, I mean, you can certainly level against it that it's extremely repetitive. You know, it's not, every single level is, right, there's some robots and ants and stuff, you should probably blow those up with your weapons, and then collect more weapons and collect armor. And sometimes you go underground, and that's about it, really.
While pressing the button that lets you shout EDF.
Yes. Or start singing the EDF song as well.
Yes. While everyone else around you shouts EDF. Yeah. EDF.
Basically, that's it. So, yeah.
It's incredibly shallow.
I'm not going to say anything else.
No, it's like Starship Troopers, the really ridiculous version.
Mm.
But yeah, it's very Moore-ish in the sense that, like, you'll unlock a new weapon and you're like, oh my god, this is a shotgun that fires grenades. I've got to try this out.
It is, yeah.
And so you do another level and you'll unlock three more weapons and you'll want to try them out and you'll be getting a little bit bored because it's a bit tedious and repetitive, but you still want to try them out. So you quit for a bit and then you'll go back to it later and it's fun again.
Even though it is a bit shonky, the scale of some of it is quite impressive. Like, when you know, 20 alien dropships pop up and everything starts exploding around you and there's giant ants everywhere, and yet it's still running at 60 frames per second somehow. I mean, I guess, I say somehow,
really,
like, it doesn't look
quite low model and texture quality. But again, there's a whole lot of shit going on, you know.
I'm used to that slowing things up, and it just doesn't. Yeah. So that's nice.
Yeah. I think it did on console, didn't it? But it works lovely on PC. It also controls quite nicely with mouse and keyboard as well. I didn't have any issues.
It does. It's a pretty reasonable port. There's a weird issue with the if you have your desktop DPI set higher than it messes up the fonts and stuff. But someone's released an unofficial patch, which I am using, which fixes that completely. I was kind of hoping they'd officially patch it, but they seem to have not bothered.
It's EDF.
Like,
random, really stupid bugs are probably something that you could expect.
Yeah. Yes, any bugs contained within the game. Bug puns are entirely intentional. So yeah, that was good. So I've been
It's a feature.
I've just been playing that kind of an hour or so every now and again. It's not a bad podcast game either, even though the dialogue's pretty good in a horrendous B-movie type way, but it is also a good podcast game because you don't really have to engage much of your mind with what you're doing. So, and yet it's still enjoyable.
Yep.
Right, your turn. Give me something you played.
I played Inside, but I think we talked about that.
We did, but what did you think?
I liked it more than Limbo, certainly.
Yeah, me too, actually. I mean, I liked Limbo a lot at the time. It's the kind of thing where I saw more of its problems retrospectively, I guess.
I didn't see problems retrospectively because I didn't play it again because it's got a giant fucking spider right at the start, which traumatized me.
I guess
Inside has no giant spider. It's fucking great.
Indeed. This is accurate. I guess, yeah, we don't want to get too spoilery inside, I guess, even though it's still pretty new, so...
Yeah, we can spoil it more after it's been on sale and everyone who complained about the prices bought it. I will say that it contains so many ridiculous ways for the protagonist to die. Like, some of them are horrific, and some of them are so ridiculous they are hilarious.
Yeah.
One or two which I did deliberately just to see what would happen.
Yeah, you've got to, haven't you? Occasionally you just think, oh, I've got through this part, but I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah. The one I'm thinking of specifically where I did it and I thought, no, I've got to do that again just to see, was...
I've got to inflict horrific trauma on a small child some more.
It was a fan blade, a spinning fan, and I was like, yeah, I've totally got to go into that fan.
I know the part you're talking about, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird actually. I suspect that I could probably mention any sort of little moment like that and you would know exactly what part I was talking about, because it is a game that it doesn't repeat itself.
No, it really doesn't, and I like that about it a lot. I think I mentioned in the review I kept coming across parts where I thought, "Oh right, this is going to be what this game is puzzle-wise." Like the first, I'll be vague, the first sort of mind control-y bit, I was like, oh, I guess I'll be doing shitloads of this. And you do more of it, but it's usually a little bit different each time. And yeah, it doesn't settle on one thing, which I guess some people won't like, but I did appreciate that it was going like, you're going to do this type of puzzle now. Now you're going to do this type of puzzle. Now it's the end.
It has too much pushing of blocks for my liking, but it doesn't do very often.
It does have a little bit of block pushing overkill, yeah.
No, that aside, it's continually introducing new concepts. And it does this very cleverly, considering that you basically have like 3-4 buttons.
Yeah, you can jump, you can push things, and you can kind of pull them along a bit. That's about
and
it,
you
really.
Can move.
Yeah, you can move. Yeah.
And yet this somehow is a setup for quite a lot of clever puzzles, which are genuinely unique and different and are not just based around pushing and pulling stuff and jumping.
Yeah, exactly. Which Limbo was a bit. It has some like gravity, polarity reversal stuff in it as well, but...
And then there's the ending, which we can't talk about.
That is incredible.
The ending is worth the asking price for the game by itself.
I think that's fair. It is a pretty expensive game if you're doing a straight time to price ratio thing, but it's one of those where I feel like it's high enough quality that I can't really complain about it too much being...
It's kind of on the edge of that for me. Like, I don't regret paying what I did for it because I actually bought it, but I can totally understand people who do. It's the sort of thing where...
That's fair.
If you're on the edge about it, then...
It's probably a bit too expensive.
I'd probably wait for it to be a bit cheaper because it is an expensive game for what it is. It's just that the quality of what it is high enough that you might not mind.
Of course, it will go on sale. Give it 6 months to a year or so, and then go for it.
Do you know something else I played since we talked about Inside? I played Hitman's bonusy stuff and the Gary Busey assassination.
I haven't got to those yet, and I missed Gary Busey, which I'm sad about.
You missed Gary Busey?
He was there for a week as well. And like, there were a couple of evenings where I thought, all right, I should do that Gary Busey thing, and then I had something else to do.
This was like the one assassination. I was like, yes, I cannot fuck this up. I cannot forget about this one.
Does he not claim to be an invincible robot man at some some point during this?
He that's claimed in the briefing.
Right, okay.
although his reactions throughout the level are similar. He wanders into the graveyard, because it's in Sapienza. He'll wander into the graveyard with his bodyguards or what have you, and he'll be looking at a grave, and then he'll start chanting a mantra and claim that the evil has been cleansed. He has a conversation with Gary Cole, who is also in the level.
He completely forgets
who Gary Cole is. He can't remember, despite the fact they've done a scene together that morning.
Because Gary Cole was the other option for the elusive. Oh, cool. I'm glad he's in there as well as like a bonus.
The setup for it is that the two of them are filming a commercial together, except right. Gary Busey's gone off the reservation, as it were. So you can see a conversation between the two of them. I'm mostly pleased because I managed to do this with a sniper rifle. This is one of the first assassinations I've pulled off with a sniper rifle, and it felt good.
Yeah, well, it can be tricky when they're being followed around by bodyguards, because I found it's tricky to separate people from their guards in this Hitman. So when that happens, I often revert to just lobbing some kind of explosive or sniping or something. Or just running in with a pistol and shooting them and running away. Which isn't very professional. But...
That does work. That's how I fucked up, I think, the previous elusive target. Because I got shot to death by doing that because I was quite tired and quite sick. But there were like 3 hours left on it, so I was like, fuck it, I'll give that a go.
Yeah.
But no, with this one, I took the sniper rifle into the level with me, and it, after following him around for a bit, I realised that there was this perfect vantage point. And his path crossed past it, and I managed to take him out without getting spotted.
Oh, very good.
Body found, obviously, nobody knew it was me. Excellent. And I drove off after shooting Gary Busey in the head with a high-caliber silent sniper rifle.
So, how are the other bonus missions? The Sapienza one is like a film set, funnily enough.
I've only done the Sapienza one so far, and I will say it is very different. It feels like a different level. A much smaller, more limited level, but it doesn't feel like Sapienza. It's kind of like it's a smaller version. It's sort of mostly set around the town square and so on. You can't get down to the beach. You can't get into the mansion. There's sort of loads of new props. All the areas that you can safely walk around in without disguise have changed, because obviously it's a closed set. Only special effects people can get into this area behind the scenes and so on. And it does feel different. Like, the shops have been reworked into sort of catering places.
I've seen
lots of little bits and pieces like that.
I've seen some... probably a trailer or screenshots or something, and it looks like it's kind of the area outside of the mansion, and those streets are kind of, and there's a lot of like rubble and fire because they're doing a sort of much in EDF fashion, a sort of B-movie thing where aliens are invading and stuff, so everything looks like it's been trashed, I guess, or everything in the film set area anyway.
The whole thing of it is that the director, who is also starring in the film, has gone way over budget, and the film is a complete mess, and the studio can't fire him because it'll cost them billions, so you've been hired to take him out. The problem being that the suit he's wearing to make it as authentic as possible is actually bulletproof.
Yes, I did hear that. I thought that was quite a nice twist.
You can, it does have, it's kind of got the Batman thing where you can see the lower jaw, and I'm fairly certain you can kill him by shooting him there.
Oh, good. That's a nice detail if that's accurate.
But by and large, you know, you've got to find other ways of doing it. Like, replace the propellant in this thing with high octane propellant so it'll catapult him up into the jaws of the robot monster and all this sort of thing. It's fantastic.
You're basically messing with the special effects to make them
pretty much. It's like, whoops, we've accidentally made the flamethrower three times more powerful. It's not a visual effect anymore.
Right. That's cool.
Which is really neat. As I say, it feels like a mini level.
Yeah.
It's sort of halfway between an elusive target and a full-fledged new mission.
Supposedly Thailand is going to be later this month, so...
Oh, really?
Yep. The more information is coming probably this week or soonish, and I reckon all signs indicate a late August release for Thailand. So
I'm going to be honest. I'm feeling slightly Hitmaned out at the moment.
Well, you've got a few weeks, and if you want to give it a rest, so.
Well, I did Marrakesh, so who knows? Maybe you can take a look at Thailand if I can't be asked. We'll see how it goes. I will inevitably play it, but I just have this thing where I keep installing and uninstalling Hitman, and its footprint on my hard drive keeps getting larger.
Need about 20 gig reserved on the hard drive before they...
Yeah, the patches are like 1 gig or something, but they extract to like 30 because they modify all of the game's files. It's faster for me to just uninstall and reinstall the game.
That's quite stupid.
But yeah, I remember when Hitman launched and it was like 7 gigs or something, and now it's...
That was nice.
So I've got it here, I'll click the install button. Now it requires 36.
Fair enough.
And there are still 3 episodes to go.
Yep. Plus any other bonus things that they might chuck in there.
I kind of wonder if some of that might be down to elusive target stuff as well, because I can't imagine they remove those assets from the game.
Probably not, no. It's probably all still in
there. So you're going to have loads of voice files and level stuff. I kind of hope that they do that, like when the full season is out and they're finished doing the elusive target stuff, that they make all of the elusive targets available again. Forever. Without the rewards, maybe. But
or with a different reward or whatever, you know.
Because, like, the Gary Busey stuff, you know, his dialogue is worth seeing.
I suspect they will, because, you know, it seems like a waste to... You know, they could bring him back as greatest hits or whatever.
Yeah.
I've heard, I don't know where this came from, but I heard a rumor that the USA level is going to be set in Colorado in a Scientology-style cult, which I really, really want to be true.
Did you finished the Marrakesh mission, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you now have slightly more of an inkling of what's going on with the plot.
Yes, yeah, I've seen that cutscene and everything, yeah.
So it could be related-ish to that, perhaps. Because the USA is the final mission of the season, isn't it? Is it Thailand, Japan, then USA? Or is it Thailand, USA, and then Japan? I thought it was USA last.
I think it's USA and then Japan last, but I'm not 100% sure on that. It may be the other way around. And Thailand's definitely next.
I will Google this.
Yeah, I'm not certain. Let's clarify this live-ish.
Yeah. I will look this up and see if I can find out. By and large, I'm still happy with Hitman. I'm pretty impressed with what they've been doing for it. It's I don't think they've nailed the episodic thing insofar as it looks a bit rubbish if you're buying it piecemeal, because then you like miss out on some bits
you
and
didn't
pieces.
If you bought it episodically, you didn't get the bonus missions, which is really stupid. Like, I don't understand why they didn't go, well, if you've bought Sapienza, then you can have the Sapienza one. If you've bought Marrakesh, you can have the Marrakesh one. Mostly I can't really fault the game, but like a lot of the sort of messaging and marketing and stuff around it has not been good, really.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Except for the Chuckle Brothers.
The Chuckle Brothers video was 100% on point.
Yeah.
Congratulations again to whoever set that up.
I think you're right. I can't find anything specifically saying that Japan is last, but everything that I'm seeing is basically saying... this will be followed by Thailand, the US, and Japan in that order.
Right,
so, the fact that it's always written in that order.
I think that's where I've always got it from, when they list it. That's how they list it. So, yeah, good. This last week, I have also been... I probably should have gone into this after the Time Commanders piece, but whatever. I have been controlling the Beast Men, who are the best men. In Total War, Warhammer.
Are they the best men?
I think they are the best men. The Minotaurs, for sure, are the best men. Like, just buy Minotaurs all day, every day. Send them into things, because it's endlessly hilarious.
Are they your favourite faction?
I mean, this may just be because they're the newest, and it's a bit of a honeymoon period. But they may be my favorite faction currently. Yeah, I like how they play, which is a lot of their default stance on the map is ambush, so you get a lot of ambushes, and a great many of their troops get vanguard deployment, which is the one that means you can deploy them outside of your little deployment zone. So,
oh, nice.
You can pop a lot of your troops in forests, or just like out on the flanks to come and fuck up the enemy later on at a later date, or to very quickly get behind them and screw with their war machines and their archers and stuff like that. They're a faction who, so their main spearmen and archers and stuff are a bit shit. They're not quite as bad as goblins in the sort of quality and leadership department, but they're that.
Yeah.
They're in the kind of greenskins caliber. So your main line won't, and they also don't really wear much armor, and nor do they have that many troops with armor piercing. So they won't hold up well against like quality armored units in a fight. So really what you have to do is make sure you have one or two very good chargers. You know, when your main units are charging in, you want to make sure that your vanguard ones are primed to slam into the back or into the flank at the same time. Or that you've heavily weighted one side of the battlefield so that you've crushed that and then can kind of wrap around the side. Which Minotaurs are very good at helping out with. Can I stress again how great the Minotaurs are? Their charging animation has them basically doing a forward somersault into the into the enemy. Which is great. And also, you never have to take any siege equipment in sieges. You just send Minotaurs at the door, and they smash the door down, barrel through whoever's in the site, protecting behind the gate, and then everyone can just flood into the castle. It's amazing.
That sounds incredible.
It is. So yeah, they're a really fun faction. They're good. They continue Total War Warhammer's good translation of tabletop factions to Total War factions, basically.
I feel like one of the things that Total Warhammer did well is that sort of the additional factions like the Beastmen and so on and so forth are interesting on the battlefield, because a lot of the bonus factions and things like Rome Total War were primarily interesting because of the strategic positions they were in.
Or the specific historical context they could bring with like a special campaign or something like that. Like Caesar in Gaul for Rome 2. Yes. Obviously, you know, that gave you Caesar's Gallic campaign to play through. So, you know, it was interesting because of that. It wasn't interesting because, oh, great, it's Romans again, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the units back in those were more po-faced.
Well, because they're from history, you know.
Yes, obviously. Whereas with this, on the other hand, there is a lot more scope for the armies to be vastly different.
Yeah.
And to me, at least, that makes things more interesting.
Found that as well. I mean, on a strategic level, the Beastmen are basically, they're like the Chaos faction. They most resemble the Chaos one in they're a horde, so-called horde faction. So you don't have settlements, you just you travel around from place to place, and when you want to improve your buildings, the buildings are like attached to each army stack, basically. And when you want to tech up, you do a sort of hidden encampment stance, it's called, on the map. And that's the way you unlock new units and things. But, you know, then that fits perfectly with the Beastmen's fiction, that they roam around in the forests, they pop out, they fuck up the Empire for a bit, and then they vanish into a different forest.
They are nomadic murder beasts.
Yep, and that's how they function. And so it comes with like a mini campaign as well, which is kind of on a zoomed-in bit of the Empire. It's like the Middenland, Hochland type area. where you play as Kazrak One Eye, who hates Boris Todbringer. Like, he really hates Boris Todbringer.
I can't help it. So you have to go and
fuck up Boris Todbringer, basically.
Todbringer is a really stupid name.
Apparently, someone commented that Todd means death in German. They're going for a sort of Holy Roman Empire, Boris Deathbringer thing, I think. Because the Empire are basically the Holy Roman Empire, as far as I can tell.
That makes sense, because Totenkopf is Death's Head.
But I prefer to think of him as Boris Todbringer. Yes. He's just having a stupid name.
Yes.
Much like Valve's lawyer, who, thanks to the cease and desist notices sent around to the gambling sites, I now know is called Carl Quackenbrush. Which is a fantastic name.
That's a really good name.
Yep. The mini campaign's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's terribly replayable, but it's a good one-off to have a good time with the Beastmen, and then you can play with them in the grand campaign as well.
It's quite an expensive expansion-y thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's $19 in US money, so probably 15 quid. Or 16 quid, maybe.
That was before Brexit. Now
it's like 50 quid now. But the UK's terrible currency aside, yeah, it's a bit on the expensive side. I mean, it's comparable to the Rome Total War expansions, like Caesar in Gaul and Hannibal at the Gates, though, which I think were similar, maybe a little bit cheaper. I think it's worth it. I mean, like, kind of like how we said about Inside, to be honest. If you're kind of wavering on the sides of, like, ooh, that seems a bit expensive, I'm not sure. Like, for example, if you're not that interested in playing the separate campaign bit, you know, you just want them as a faction in the grand campaign, then it's a bit on the expensive side, yeah. And then you might want to wait. I mean, because it's Warhammer, I'm kind of treating it like if you were playing Warhammer, you know, the armies people buy are the ones that they tend to favor their playstyle, or, you know,
yeah,
they kind of have some kind of affinity to, they like what the race is about, what the faction's about, you know. I figure people will buy it like that. You know, if they think fuck elves, they're just going to not buy any elf stuff, and if they're not interested in Beastmen, they probably won't buy Beastmen.
Also look at it as buying Total Warhammer and all of its expansions is still probably cheaper than actually buying an army for Warhammer tabletop.
This is it, yeah. $20 in Games Workshop prices would get you, like, one Minotaur, probably.
Yeah.
And two other little beast men, probably plastic ones. So judged through that lens, it's incredibly good value. Judged through the DLC lens, it's a little expensive, but probably all right. Yeah. And, the Beastmen, their roster isn't 100% complete, but none of the factions in the game have a 100% complete roster. You know, that I'm pretty sure as the game progresses, various armies will get extras. Like, the Undead got some Blood Knights with the previous patch, I think. So I reckon they'll probably introduce extras every now and again, but they can't... There's a shitload of Warhammer stuff. They can't create and model absolutely everything, so I'm prepared to cut them some slack there, you know. When they get around to doing High Elves and Dark Elves and stuff, I'm pretty sure you won't be able to get every single unit for each of those factions, because there's loads of them. It was good. I like the Beastmen. I'm now keen to see what they do with... Well, Bretonnia supposedly will be the freebie, which I think they'll probably do next. Probably. I read a good suggestion that basically for the Bretonnian campaign, it should all be quest-based. And you should always, you should basically just be having to send out knights on quests continually, and that's basically it.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I quite like that. It's nice. Rather than, kill all of the Empire or whatever. Because I don't know what... I guess theirs would be kill all the Beastmen, now that the Beastmen are in it, maybe? Kill all the Orcs? I don't know. They're sort
Find
of
the Holy Grail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when wood elves show up, which who presumably will, then I guess wood elves and Britonia will be the natural antagonists, but wood elves aren't in it yet, so I don't know. We'll see.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it hasn't appeared yet.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll add Britonia. What are we going to do for the campaign? Shit.
Wood elves. Wait, we don't have wood elves yet. All right.
Britonia will be the free faction released after all of the other expansions.
In 2017. Yeah. I kind of wonder how the grand campaign itself is going to change eventually. Because, I mean, right now, beastmen are just in that. They pop up and fuck up the Empire and stuff. But...
It does. Yeah. That gives rise to two questions, actually. The first is, have the Beastmen turned up if you haven't bought the Beastmen DLC?
Yes, they do. You can't.
So they are now in the Grand Campaign, regardless of whether or not you have the Beastmen DLC. That's interesting.
They will show up, yeah.
The other thing that makes me wonder is if they might do... sort of like how it was with Chaos initially, that the Bretonnian campaign might be focused against the Wood Elves before the Wood Elves are even released to play as.
Oh, interesting, so they might be...
A little... A bit of a teasery thing.
That could be
interesting, or perhaps Bretonnia will be released alongside Wood Elves or something like that.
Yeah, because I could see a very good mini-campaign being Bretonnia versus Wood Elves. And, you know, the free faction is Britonia, and if you pay, then you can play as the Wood Elves too.
Mm.
Something like that, yeah. That's quite possible. I'm not sure, because I feel like the Grand Campaign is going to get really busy if they keep adding all, eventually it's going to be really fucking difficult to play as the Empire, because you're going to have to deal with, like, Wood Elves, Beastmen, Skaven, probably.
You might not have to deal with the Wood Elves too much, because, you know, Britonia.
That's true. Anytime you go near a forest, though, the wood elves are going to freak out. What are you doing to our trees? Oh.
Every time you go near a city, the Skaven are going to leap out.
Exactly. So basically nowhere is safe. I actually like the Games Workshop version of wood elves. Actually, they're not hippies at all. They're like psychotic pagan nutters.
They're quite similar to the Witcher's version of elves, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah. They're own...
Well, sort of. The Scoia'tael, anyway.
Yeah.
The murderous, rebellious band who just want to kill humans because they took their land.
Yep. Seems fair to me. That's a reasonable grievance. Alright.
The Witcher, where everyone is racist.
And where if you try to solve racism, nobody thanks you for it. They're like, look, what are you doing? You're just some guy. You can't roll back thousands of years of oppression. Just give up. Stop trying. And you're like, oh, but alright.
But it's a video game.
Yes, I'm used to being Commander Shepard, where I can solve everything in the universe. Alright, back to you. What was something else that you've... What other game have you played that is a thing?
I've actually played quite a lot of Final Fantasy XIV over the past week, because I haven't wanted to spend any time in the real world.
Well, good choice.
That's the MMO.
Oh, right, okay. Wow, yeah.
And I hadn't played that since launch. So I thought, you know what, I don't want to deal with the real world at the moment, and I need something that I don't really have to focus on too much, an MMO.
I'll look at Chocobos for a while.
Yeah.
Has that had any, like, major updates recently, or...
Fucking loads. Since I last played it, which was around about launch, there were, like, 5 patches, and then an expansion, and we're talking major patches that added in new quests and storyline stuff.
Is 14 the one they like relaunched at some point? Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was horribly broken at launch, and then I didn't play that. And then A Realm Reborn was released,
right,
where they went, oh, look, the apocalypse happened and destroyed the other world. Destroyed
all the bad bits of code that were
now. Now we're set in a world after the apocalypse.
Right.
A Realm Reborn was where I started, which was, I think, technically Final Fantasy 2.0.
Fair enough.
And then they released, like, 6 patches, all of which added in, like, new quests, new dungeons, new storyline stuff in typical MMO fashion.
Yeah, so
then there was the Heavensward.
Updates rather than patches, really.
Yeah. Then there was the Heavensward full expansion.
I remember that one coming out.
And then there have been, like, 3 more patches on top of that, or 4 more patches since then.
Right.
Which, again, add in more quests and dungeons.
What's your character? What's the deal with your Final Fantasy XIV character?
I decided that in A Realm Reborn, I went with a cat lady because it's a cat lady, why not? This time around, I decided, because I also had access to the Heavenswood, that I would go with the new race, which is the sort of half sort of dragony people.
Lizard man.
Who are hilariously called the O'Ra.
Isn't that what US Marines say when they're excited about something?
Basically. Yeah. So yeah, now I'm an angry dragon lady instead.
Fair enough.
The more I play this game, like the Realm Reborn content is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. The dialogue is largely awful. The voice acting is largely awful. It's quite nice that they tried to do a bit of a story thing. And then around about the point where they started releasing the patches, like after you finish A Realm Reborn, the whole thing is story-led, weirdly.
Okay.
Like, to unlock certain areas, dungeons, features, you have to proceed through the main scenario quest, as it's called.
Right.
Which means that even if you buy Heavensward, you have to do the entire story of A Realm Reborn, and then the 100 or so story quests that were added in between.
Okay.
It takes a while to get into the Heavensward content.
Did you make it?
I have just made it to the Heavensward content.
After playing solidly for 3 months.
Basically. around about sort of the point where they started doing the post-release content, decided to drop the po-facedness of it, and it got a bit more ridiculous, and that is much to its advantage.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
There is an entire quest line in the patch, which is Inspector Hildebrand, where he is a bumbling idiot who believes that he is the greatest inspector in the land.
Okay. I like it.
I like it. It's basically a series of comedy skits with occasional really good boss battles. as an example, at one point you're chasing the thief of many faces who can disguise themselves as anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And at the second of the quests, you hear that he's going to steal what you believe to be a lady who is being married off, a blind marriage. You think he's going to kidnap her. And so you head off there and you're investigating along with Hildebrand and trying to figure out who could the Phantom Thief possibly be, who's he impersonating. You manage to convince said lady to, hide away for a bit, and we'll cause a distraction, we'll unmask the Phantom Thief and so on. And Hildebrand decides that the best distraction he can do is to dress up as the lady. And so he turns up as a muscular bearded man in a dress, and when the groom goes, "There is no way in hell that you're my bride," he goes, "Aha, you must be the Phantom Thief, because the groom had never seen the bride before. How could you possibly know that's not me?"
Flawless logic.
Exactly. It's basically a series of quests that are pretty much a farce. And it's great. I love it.
So so for the new stuff, that's not unusual then. Then, you know, this isn't just a kind of one-off comedy bit. Some of the other bits are also leaning.
Some of the other bits also lean on the fourth wall quite heavily, the fact that your character has no voice acting and responds to almost everything with a nod of the head, and it's like, oh, it'll be, you know, our character goes, "Oh, it's been nice working with you, but you've got to go. I'm very sorry about this." "Well, are you going to say anything?" "No, you're just going to give me another one of your bloody nods, aren't you?" Character nods.
Excellent. Oh, it sounds like they're having fun with it. They've kind of been let loose a bit, maybe.
I mean, the main storyline is still relatively po-faced, although Heavenswood seems to be doing it a bit better than Realm Reborn did. There are less useless characters. They also changed all of the voice actors, which is weird.
Wow, okay.
It's like so... you finish the Realm Reborn content and get into Heavenswood and all the returning characters are voiced by different people.
That's weird.
Like the general of the sand country, the desert country, is suddenly voiced by a Sean Bean sound alike.
Oh, wow. Do they make any fourth wall meta references to this at any point? Okay.
I was like,
you sound different.
It had been a while since I'd heard a few of the characters, and I was like, I'm sure he didn't sound like that before. I asked my guild, or free communities,
Scottish. What happened?
Yeah. Like, did they change all of the voices in Heavenswood? And everyone goes, yes.
Weird. Oh well.
But I'm having fun with it. It's quite good at the moment as a nice distraction to keep me occupied and busy. To occupy the brain and give me stuff to do. It's got plenty of the typical MMO flaws. You know, there are bits of grinding and so on. Not much. Mostly if you want to level alternate classes, but it is good. I like it.
A bit of grinding isn't always terrible as long as the process itself is relatively enjoyable and it doesn't go on too long.
I like doing most of the dungeons and the trials, which are sort of the individual huge boss fights, which only take about 5 minutes to do but require 8 players, and they're good fun.
Yeah.
And they added the gold saucer, which is the casino thing from Final Fantasy VII, because it's also full of references to the other Final Fantasy games, especially after the end of Realm Reborn. There's chocobo racing and all sorts of other shit that you can waste your time with.
Does it reference Tidus's laugh from Final Fantasy, whatever the
name is? No, unfortunately. Not yet.
It's a shame.
Although, considering that half of...
Still
considering that half of the bosses and characters from other Final Fantasy games are cropping up in this as bosses, it is possible. Did you play Final Fantasy VI at all?
No.
I know you played Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played that.
Okay.
I think the only Final Fantasy thing I've played is a demo of 7, maybe. Which one's the one with Cloud? Is that 7?
That's 7.
Yeah. I played a demo of 7. That's it. That's my Final Fantasy experience. That's it.
Well, there's one of the references that made me grin like an idiot when I noticed it was that when you finish Realm Reborn, your reward is a suit of Magitech armor as a mount. Up until then, you're probably just riding around on chocobos, but you get a suit of Magitech armor, and it looks exactly like the concept art for the Magitech armor from Final Fantasy VI. Oh, and cool. When you ride it, it plays an orchestral version of Terra's theme from Final Fantasy VI. Oh,
that's pretty nice.
Which plays at the very start of that game as you're riding Magitech armor and trudging slowly through a snowfield, and it is just one of the most perfectly fitting things. It's full of lovely little references and moments like this. And so it's quite rewarding for someone who's played like all of the Final Fantasy games. And I'm enjoying it in that sense as well. So yeah, I'm having quite a good time with it. I'm intending to write a bit about it. I'm just having difficulty doing so. I've come to the conclusion that the main character is a psychopath, for instance. or at least has
a
some
silent,
sort of
nodding psychopath.
So some sort of serious like mental instability, at least. I want to expound on this.
That goes for a lot of video game characters, honestly.
But... yeah, I mean, I'm starting to get creeped out by my protagonist at this point.
that's concerning. Definitely concerning.
It's like, yeah, there is no way a normal person would react like this.
That goes nicely, I guess, into something else I played, which is We Happy Few. For a second there,
I was thinking, like, Wii, as in W-I-I, the Nintendo console. It took you played a Wii game called Happy Few.
I did get given review code for The Little King Story, which I believe was a Wii game.
That is a great game.
I've played some of it.
It has an awful lot of really stupid issues, or at least it did when I played it on 3DS, I think I played it on, and that had fixed a lot of the Wii issues. So maybe the PC version has fixed more.
I'm under NDA, so I don't think I can say anything else, but, you know, that's...
I can talk freely about it, because only played it on the 3DS.
But no, We Happy Few, which came out on Early Access last week, I think, early last week, for $30. My opinion is it's a little bit early for it to be on Early Access, even. It's a little rough.
Is it as early as that one game, which was like a room and you couldn't interact with anything, top-down RPG or whatever it was?
No, it's a lot better than that. It has mechanics in place that you can use, you know. You can go around the world and do things. Well, I guess the first thing to mention is that this is a first-person survival crafting type game. It reminds me most of Sir, You Are Being Hunted, right down to the fact that it's on like separate little islands. If all you saw from We Happy Few was the trailer for it at E3, you probably think it's some kind of super narrative heavy, linear, single player thing, but it's not. So don't go thinking
It might be. I believe the narrative is the one thing they haven't added to it yet.
It's going to have some narrative bits, which, I mean, that kind of, I don't know. It worries me that they just go, oh yeah, we'll just add the story later. Like, that's some easy thing to do. I don't think that is an easy thing to do.
It might not be a case of, they're adding it later. It's more a case of they don't want to add it to the early access build piecemeal. They would rather have all of, you know, the story may already be done, planned out, plotted, scripted, and so on. It's just they're not putting it in.
Stylistically, this is a very, it's 60s, 70s-ish themed, but in a retro future way. So there's some kind of... anachronistic technology stuff in there, fictitious things.
The art style reminds me a lot of, it's kind of sitting halfway between Dishonored and BioShock.
Yes, it is. And thematically, it's pulling a bunch from the greatest hits of British dystopian fiction, like 1984, Brave New World, Patrick McGoohan's The Prisoner. You know, it's very... The fact that there's like colourful, cheerful village that you're trapped in is very Prisoner-esque.
I'm not sure that I would say Patrick McGoohan's The Prisoner is one of the greatest hits of British dystopia, but are people who would probably disagree. It's up there.
Yeah, I would disagree. How is it not?
I wouldn't put it up there with 1984.
I'd put it up against Brave New World. Brave New World's not that amazing. Yeah, 1984 is a classic that lots of people quote and have never read. It's a great one for that.
I think I read it when I was about 12 and I cannot remember anything about it.
Well, that's fair, but at least you've read it. I read it quite a few years ago now, but I can't say I remember huge bits from it. Anyway, you play through a little narrative section to begin with, which is basically the bit from that E3 trailer that everyone's seen. You are Arthur, a guy who is kind of, your job is redacting stuff from newspapers in a direct 1984 Brazil reference. But you haven't been taking your magical joy pills that everyone has to take to stay happy.
Why not?
I don't know. You just haven't been. I guess you've maybe they'll explain that when it's released. I don't know. You're just some people go off their meds in this world. It's not uncommon. They're called downers, the people who haven't been taking their meds.
Now I heard that makes me think of like offensive slang for people with Down syndrome.
It's not referencing that, so don't worry.
I know, it's just one of those things. It made me feel slightly uncomfortable the first time I heard that.
Yeah.
It was like when that Nintendo game got recalled, because if you did badly, it called you a spaz.
Hugely inappropriate, but also quite funny.
Yes.
They also call the Downers wastrels. Does that help at all?
A little bit, yeah.
And anyway, all the Downers and the wastrels, they get sent to the, I think it's called the Garden District, which is a very run-down kind of slum area where the buildings are all falling down and stuff. And that's where you start the actual game proper, because you've fled from your workplace once they figured out you're a Downer. Hiding.
That just sounds so wrong. I fucking hate Downers. It's like, come on,
unfair dismissal case to be addressed there, don't you? Yeah. So you're in a safe house in this garden area, and from that point, yeah, it's a pretty straightforward survival crafting game where you've got to look through people's houses for food and water. You've got to go back to your little safe house to sleep every now and again. You're basically scavenging through people's houses 90% of the time to find items that you can possibly craft into something useful that might be used for a quest. For example, to get off the first island area that you're on, you have to make a padded suit so you can approach some bees to take some honey, because there's a crazy person who wants honey as a toll to let you across to the next island. That's most of what you're doing in this early access version is scavenging stuff and crafting stuff. And then when you get to the place where you are, all the joy popping people are, it becomes a bit more stealth based because there's a bunch of policemen around, and also if you're not eating joy continuously, people start getting suspicious of you.
Is there a downside to eating joy?
It's limited. You won't find much of it, and when you come off it, you get withdrawal and your hunger and thirst meters, which fill up or go down astonishingly quickly. This guy can starve to death in a day. He's pathetic.
I want to ask, because the only bit I've seen of this was someone who was playing the first islandy bit in the rundown garden, where everyone appeared to be a lunatic. Is everyone a lunatic in the second area as well?
I mean, they're a bit weird because they're all on drugs, so they're all just like thinking life is great. A bunch of them are like just sort of stamping in puddles excitedly. But then there are some other people who seem a bit more together, who give you quests and stuff on that island.
I just mean like the first island, like everyone seems to be coming out with non sequiturs about pigeons and things.
Yeah.
They seem to be like genuinely not
No, there. That pretty much continues. I don't know if a lot of that is placeholder dialogue, because they have said they're adding more conversational NPC interactions and stuff.
I suppose mentioning its placeholder dialogue is a good segue onto what part of this feels a bit early.
Basically just that it's not that fun. Stylistically it's great. I love all of that stuff. It's just, it has a pretty unremarkable crafting system. That's not that interesting. It's got really quite the stealth stuff in it reminds me of like the 3D Fallout games or Skyrim or something, where all you're doing is going in someone's house, waiting for them to just wander out of the room, and then taking some stuff from the dresser. And if they see you, then you get a pretty straightforward first person combat thing where you just kind of punch them a couple of times or hit them with a stick until they fall over.
Isn't this just what we did in Divinity Original Sin, though, where we just went into people's houses and nicked off their art?
Yes, that seemed a lot more freeform and creative, though, and more emergent in terms of how you could solve things.
Although ridiculous. Because people would leave a room and you would pinch all of their paintings and they would walk back in and they wouldn't notice that.
It's fine to go into people's houses in this. I'm not saying it's weird that they let you in, because most of them are falling down. So it's not like they can really stop you. Because They're quite communal, all of these buildings, really. It's not weird for you to be in there. It's just weird for you to be taking stuff.
Sure.
So the other thing is that the world's sort of procedurally generated, which I would characterize as it kind of shuffles the tiles around, like certain quests will be in a different place, or they might not be there at all. You might get a different quest, such as there's one where there's a guy in a treehouse who tells you to go and fetch a doll from a puppet theater company. So if you play it again, that quest may not be there, or it might be in a different part of the map, but the quest will be the same effectively. So that's the kind of procedural generation that you have going on. And I don't know how much that benefits the game, really. It's I think it actually hinders it in the later sections where you're trying to sneak around patrols of policemen and stuff, because I feel like those would be better as designed sections, you know, like a Dishonored level or what have you.
Yeah. Is it meant to be sort of played as a permadeath thing?
You can. That is an option. I don't know if I'd say you'd meant to play it that way. Possibly. Well,
that would make all the I can procedural say is, all generation I can say is, make more sense.
All
I
can say is it's an option. So, you know, that is an angle that you can take, certainly. I'm not loving how many of the mechanics work is basically my problem with it.
I suppose the question is, do you think that there is room for this to become a good game? Is there an indication that closer to launch, when they will presumably have tuned the combat, stealth, and so on and so forth? I say presumably. Maybe they are perfectly happy with how they work. Is there the potential for this to be something a bit special?
I'm most forgiving about the combat because it predominantly tries to make you avoid combat. You know, there's a couple of quests where you do have to engage in it, but it seems like that, you know, it's not a focus. So I'm not expecting it to go fully Xenoclash in its first person, you know.
I guess sort of like Dishonored in that way, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Combat was definitely not the focus of that.
I did have a few like decent emergent type moments from it. Like there's a sort of a set piece where you're creeping around a place that's basically a minefield. It has a bunch of tripwire traps, basically. And you can disarm these using a trap disarming device that you can craft, but gathering all the stuff for that and finding the special crafting bench is really tedious if you're having to do that for like 9 or 10 traps. So what I discovered was that there are some people in this area as well, and what I discovered is, one, you could sometimes lure the people into running at you and setting off the tripwires, and two, you could lob their bodies at the tripwires to set them off instead. And that was great. That was like, okay, I'm using the rules that you've given me, you know, classic emergent stuff. I'm using the rules you've given me to come up with a left field solution or something, and that's great. I'm liking this.
Good stuff.
And there's definitely scope for more of that to occur, I think. Maybe if there are different, better quests added in later. A lot of the stuff you're doing at the moment is pretty fetch questy, which, you know, there's a place for if they're well written and stuff. I'm not saying that's necessarily bad. I think it's, I don't feel like the different mechanical strands are gelling yet. It's difficult to say. I can't comment too much on the sort of narrative side of things because most of it just isn't there. I don't know how that'll kind of integrate into it. Hopefully well.
If I may make an analogy based on everything you've said, it is currently a very pretty shell.
Yeah. Pretty much. And I see where the mechanics are trying to, what they're trying to go towards. I just don't think they've kind of coalesced into this sort of coherent set of things yet, really. And again, while it's stylistically very nice, a lot of it just feels like references at the moment because it doesn't have a narrative identity of its own in there yet. It's mostly just like, hey, remember 1984? Yeah, I do, but what are you going to do with that? And that, yeah, you know, they said up front that's not in there yet, so fair enough. But
yeah,
so hold off for now would be my suggestion. But
it's not quite Don't Starve at this point.
No,
I think was,
and it's not an early access game like I don't know.
Don't Starve.
Okay, sure. I didn't play that one. I was trying to think of one I'd actually played in early access where it felt like, oh, this is basically finished. But
Don't Starve, RimWorld. RimWorld still has a lot to go, but there's a lot. You know, there's a lot of fun to be having that prison architect.
Something like that.
Invisible Ink.
Yes.
Well, Invisible Ink.
Invisible Ink changed quite a lot, didn't it? Didn't they change the sort of how the combat, whether it was based on random numbers or not?
They did change quite a lot of stuff, but yeah. I mean, Invisible Ink was still, you know, that was also, I think, only sort of one third of the game, but it was perfectly playable and enjoyable. It had the mechanics there and so on and so forth.
I will say that the We Happy Few people seem very active in their early access forum, and they're putting up big posts about, like, here's what our next update will have, and we're tweaking the meters and the survival meters. And so they seem very engaged and, you know, on the ball. So, that bodes well. That's good.
That is, I hope that this is kind of a genuine early access thing where they are using early access as an actual sort of an open beta to seek out the problems, to fix things.
I think they are. It looks that way. So
rather than the many people who use early access as a way to,
get some money,
sell a demo of the game.
Yeah. No, I hope I come back in 6 months or whatever and go, oh, okay, yeah. I see what... I remember how this mechanic used to work. I see how it's working now. That's good now, kind of thing. We'll see. I don't know. I think the thing says they plan to be in early access anywhere up to like a year, so it could be a while before. And that's fine.
Sure. I just hope that not too many people are put off by the rough state of early access, if indeed it does turn out to be one that becomes vastly improved over the course of the year.
I mean, that is the risk, isn't it? I mean, my main concern is that most people's first introduction to this game was the E3 trailer.
Yes.
And I've seen a lot of people, when they find out it's a survival crafting thing, go, oh, fuck that, I'm not interested anymore. Which, I mean, fair enough. I mean, if that's not for you, you're not going to suddenly get won over by it, but...
It's kind of a shame, though,
that if you got really attracted to this game on what you thought was one thing and then you find out it's something completely different, that's unfortunate.
I mean,
I'm not saying they misled people or anything, just that that's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed by what they showed at E3, but then again, I'd also been following it for a while before that, and I knew exactly what it was.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They did a Kickstarter campaign and everything where it was very obvious what this was trying to be. It's simply a bit of a marketing fuck up to introduce to everyone to it. Like, I mean, it would have been easy enough. They could have just shown that trailer and then had another minute or so of running around, you know, scavenging stuff and bring up the crafting menu and stuff like that, and everyone would have gone, oh, all right, it's this. But there we go.
But then again, if they are still tweaking all of that sort of thing, then I suppose that's not really the place. You don't really want that to be debuting on E3 stage.
No, not really. Yeah, the UI needs... Well, I just want a way to sort my shit in the... Because all I've got at the moment is just a big jumbled mess. And everything is the same colour, and it's difficult to pick out what is a rotten apple versus what's a rock or something. It's just a bit annoying. But, I mean, that's early access stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Right, let's have one more game from you, Tim, and then we'll... Or not, if you don't know.
I was thinking we were going to wrap up there, to be honest.
But we can. It's been well over an hour actually. So
okay, well, I think we'll close up there for the moment. Then sure I can.
That's cool.
Believe me, there are dozens of other things I could mention, but
well, that's why I'm never concerned by throwing it over to you. Unlike when Paul's on and I feel a bit hesitant.
Paul, what have you played? Spreadsheets!
I've played Keeping the Site Running. It's an important game, but it's not a great one to talk about.
Microsoft Excel.
I believe he's been doing VR stuff, because he's recording. I think he was recording some kind of Vive game today. I'm not sure which one, so there you go. Look forward to that.
All fancy into that VR stuff, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Yeah, you can watch, he did a couple of videos on one called Raw Data, which I think is a shooter, first-person shooter, VR.
Has he played any horror games yet?
I don't think so, not to my knowledge. I was delighted to see Outlast 2 being delayed to next, sorry Outlast fans, but that means it's a longer time until I might have to play it. So.
Yeah, well, it's not just that, you know, there is the possibility that I will have to suffer through it at that point. I might not have the issues I currently have that prevent me from playing things like that.
You've still got your Dark Souls 3 chip to cash in at some point, which I think you did threaten at one point to use as a I'm getting out of reviewing this game key. Which I think is fair. It's all part of the agreement.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes.
What else has been on the site? Well, there's a Wee Happy Few preview. There's a bunch of stuff about Warhammer Beastmen, both a faction guide and a review of that. What else have I written recently? A lot of stuff about lawsuits, honestly. It's been a hot week for lawsuits. Paul's done his Raw Data videos. We've had a couple of like summary articles of here's all the information about South Park or Tyranny or something like that. So, you know, articles galore. Not many podcasts in the last couple of weeks. Sorry about that. We'll try and keep on a more regular schedule. It might be every other week, but we'll see.
I blame you, Parrish.
Oh, that's my fault. I've been busy.
Fair enough, then. Anyway. I could just monologue one.
Yeah, true.
We're going after No Man's Sky review code.
None as yet. I think there's new reports now that say there will be pre-release review copies knocking around. But whether that's like 2 days before or only on PlayStation 4, I don't know. So anyway, that's the score with No Man's Sky. And yeah, I'm looking at Little King's Story, so there'll be something on that later in the week. Good.
Right, well, I'll see you next week where I'll be doing a vidcast with a sock on my hand with eyes sewn onto it.
Please do. I look forward to it. Do it in Wee Happy Few style with your face all like... with full white face paint makeup and
I would like to do that. That sounds I think I do actually have some like face painting crayons like you for drawing on skin. I've got my badger mask if I need to.
Hotline Miami style. Great. All right, good. Thank you for listening everybody to this podcast. We'll be back again soon-ish, probably next week, maybe the week after, who knows. Goodbye.
Bye.
Silent under the dawn of that last great day.
The date is 371 BC. The place is Leuctra on the Boeotian plain in central Greece. The army of Thebes has assembled to challenge the mighty power of the city-state of Sparta. They're locked in a bitter struggle for control of the region. Today, the fate of one of these armies rests with a netball team from London. Made up of two generals.
Charge at them, not kill each other. Charge, go.
And two lieutenants.
We don't have much cavalry.
We don't have cavalry.
Using state-of-the-art technology and all their tactical skills, the team will refight this battle and attempt to change the course of history. This is Time Commanders.